The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
The Steve Austin Show Unleashed is sponsored in part this week by DDP Yoga. Hey, man, working countless matches over the years, it's no surprise that DDP's body has taken its share of bumps and bruises. Pain may be a part of the wrestling game of spending over a decade in the wrestling business, and nobody knows this any better than Diamond Dallas Page. But just like the wear and tear we took in the wrestling ring, you doing whatever you do. Over the years, your body is taking everything that you're throwing at it in the form of work, play, life in general. Your body gets beat up as we go through life. Hey man, DDP Yoga is right up your alley because DDP Yoga is a fitness system that was designed specifically to burn fat, reduce pain, and heal from injuries. Injuries from working your ass off all of your life. That's what we do. Check it out. DDPY has already transformed the lives of superstars like Mick Foley, who's lost over 100 pounds, and Chris Jericho, who uses DDP Yoga to help him keep kicking ass at 47 years young. It's also been used by AJ Styles, Goldust, Edge, Jake the Snake Roberts, and Scott Hall, just to name a few. Dallas is still spreading the word to all of the world out there to try his DDPY program, and you know what? When you think about it, don't sound too bad because here's all the benefits. DDPY has been trying to get the word out there for his DDPY program for years, and it really doesn't sound too bad because DDPY is a kick-ass cardio workout. It will dramatically increase your flexibility. It will strengthen your core like never before, and that's all with minimal joint impact. All you got to do is download the DDP Yoga Now app to have with you while you're on the go. The DDP Yoga Now app has everything you're going to need. It's going to track your weight, all your workouts, how many calories you burned, and Dallas himself sets you up for weekly success by giving you an easy schedule to follow that includes his tips for success. There's over 100 workouts on the app, and every week there's a new live DDPY workout. There's also 100 recipes for some great-tasting, healthy food and over 100 motivational Mondays to keep you inspired to not just change your life, but to own your life. But if you're more old-school and prefer DVDs over the DDPY app, they have the DVDs. But when you buy the DVDs, you still receive 3 months free on the DDPY app, so you can try it out. And just for Steve Austin listeners, you can save 20% off an annual membership for the DDP Yoga Now app of any DVD pack. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to get started. So what are you doing? Stop wasting time and download the DDP Yoga Now app. And make this year the year you get serious about your health and get fit. Let DDP Yoga Now help you set your goals, take control, and own your life.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're gonna take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio. And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is Steve Austin Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the main streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting over here at 317 Gimmick Street, chilling out. I got my laptop computer on a 4x4 table, cup of coffee over here that I can drink with my right hand, sitting there cutting open this here podcast. There's a bird in my front yard, and that son of a buck is out there whistling and chirping and squawking, and he's making more racket. You know, most times birds sound pretty. They make fun noises. They whistle. They're entertaining to listen to. Not this little bastard. He's irritating the hell out of me. I might bust out my Daisy Red Rider and send him one. Meanwhile, in the backyard, that little-ass 12-pound whatchamacallit dog back there is barking his fool head off. I got every damn door closed inside this house to try to barricade the sound of his annoying bark so it doesn't get picked up on my microphone. The award-winning podcast, which ain't never won a goddamn thing, will continue to be an award-winning podcast that ain't never won a goddamn thing. Anyway, I'm sitting here, man. It's Wednesday as I cut the open to this podcast, and I got back in Los Angeles, California, from flying over there to New York City, go down to Brooklyn, head over to the Barclays Center and take part of Monday Night Raw. God dang, what a whirlwind of a couple of days it is. Hell, man, I've been used to being a civilian for quite some time. You get out there on the road, start humping it again. Takes me back. Man, when I was in road mode, when I was, you know, a zombie, you know, out there traveling from town to town, country to country, that's what I did. These days, when you go out there, it's a grind. I had an absolute blast at Monday Night Raw. I got a chance to see damn near the whole roster, talk with all the guys and girls, and get a chance to meet some of the new superstars that I've never met before, both from the men and the women's division. And it was just awesome to be around the guys and girls again, to walk through the halls, see what everybody's doing, check in with my all the sound guys, the light guys, all those guys working on the crew, the camera guys that I've known forever, go over and talk to Terry Anderson, the seamstress, and say hi to her. Man, it was awesome. Got a chance to visit a little bit with the old man, talk with him. It was weird because I got a chance to talk to so many of the people that I was looking forward to talking to, but half the crew, or however many people of the crew, were over at the Manhattan Center. And there was a lot of people over there that I wanted to catch up with, but those buildings are, I don't know, 45 minutes apart, and I went to the Barclays Center, and I tell you what, man, I kind of got the creative, the 411 about what we were going to do, and milled around talking with people and just waiting for my time to get up and get out there and go to work. And I tell you what, man, we were standing over at the gorilla position. I was sitting there shooting the breeze with Stephanie, and there's Shane over there doing his thing, and the old man was back there behind me, and everybody started going out and cutting the promos. All of a sudden, man, they crashed that music, that glass broke. A damn shot of adrenaline shot through every single cell inside my body when that glass broke. That crowd exploded. The roof blew off the Barclays Center, and I romped and stomped my way down to that square circle. Hit all four corners. Give everybody a double bird at every single corner. And then stood there in the middle while I listened to Vince McMahon cut a promo, and everybody proceeded to just go, what, 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 every single time Vince paused. And boy, I tell you what, that was a strong-ass crowd. I tell you what, man, I don't know about a decibel level, but that was a shrill-ass pop. It just lit me up. Here's the thing, man, when anybody goes out, whether you're guy, girl, green, veteran, it don't matter. When you go out there, whatever you get is what that audience is giving you, and it's a barometer or a thermometer or an indication or a gauge of where you're at in their mind. Hey, man, I ain't been around in years. For that glass to break, for those people to explode like that, telling you right now, Brooklyn, anybody that was part of it, thank you very much. When you send out that signal in the form of a loud ass, just yell, pop, explosion, you live and die by that, and that's just a dead-on, straight-up truth. You live and die by it. And then I was on Twitter. On Twitter, my account is Steve Austin BSR, and people were sending videos of them jumping up and down in front of their television sets while they were watching at home. So, hey, man, I want to thank the people in Brooklyn for the pop, and I want to thank everybody across the United States of America for watching the show. If you listen to my podcast, I'm telling you thank you. The ratings were through the roof for the show. I was really happy to be a part of it, and I was glad to be invited back. And it was just great to go out there and be in front of, you know, a WWE audience. I was put on this earth. I always wanted to be a professional wrestler. I've been retired since 2003. You know, it brought me back a couple of times, walked down there, smiled, blah, 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 blah. You know, they brought me back in the right capacity. They said, man, we want you to be the old Stone Cold, just ripping, snorting, mean as a junkyard dog, and go out there and do your thing. That's when I'm at home. That's when I do my best work. A lot of people say, hey, man, you're one of the best talkers in the business. Why didn't you cut a promo? What was I going to say? What was the setup? You know, the setup was, Shane and Stephanie cut the promo. They brought out Vince. He cut a promo. The master that he is, he sets the table up for Stone Cold, basically insults the Brooklyn crowd, enhancing the pop that I was to receive. And they set the table for me. So there's no reason for me to grab a stick and start debating back and forth with anybody out there. The task at hand was, you had, I don't know, a countless, I can't count how many WWE superstars they flew in for this big-ass show. You've got 3 hours to feature your featured, you know, performers for 25 years. You've got to carry on your current storylines. You're building to the Rumble. There are so many things going on. They didn't need me out there flapping my gums, cutting a promo. So I came out there, kicked ass, drank a few beers, and got out of Dodge. I had a blast. Thank you again very, very much. The ratings were through the roof. I got on my Twitter account, man, and people were just crazy. I had thousands and thousands of tweets and thumbs up and stuff like that. But a lot of people, you know, kind of weren't happy with the rest of the show. And I'm like, man, I was at the Barclays Center for about an hour and a half drinking beer in the back before I took a shower. And, man, I was enjoying the hell out of it. You know, I DVR Raw every single week. I don't watch it all the time. But there was so much negative talk about it or criticism of it or lackluster. They could have done this. They could have done that. Man, put yourself in their shoes. I mean, you got 25 years worth of material you're trying to pay homage and respect to. You 25 years of live television all over the United States or the world and never, ever miss a single shot. You know, it's pretty incredible. So it's kind of a celebration. When I saw some of the naysayers, read what they were saying, I was like, man, what are you looking for? What do you think they could have done better? They already had, you know, 100 pounds of stuff trying to put it in a 50-pound bag. So if you have any concise, clear comments on how you would have booked the 25th anniversary of Monday Night Raw, I'd be really entertained if you would send them to questions@steveaustinshow.com. And I'll read them on the air and make my comments about them because, you know, it is what it is and it was what it was. I mean, you've got so many people, so many moving parts, so many different things going on. You just can't book a perfect show. Or if you can book a perfect show, you tell me what that perfect show would have been. And here's the thing, man. Everything in life, whether it's the color red, blue, green, your favorite car, your favorite taste or smell, it's all subjective. Same thing with the wrestling show. From what I saw, what are you going to do, man? I'm watching some of the people I used to run up down the road with. I got a chance to watch Undertaker talk for about 2 minutes. The volume was turned down. I couldn't hear everything that he was saying. I got a chance. I came in and I went right to the back and started getting the beer off of me. The women went out after me. And then Roman and Miz had a damn good match. What I saw was damn good. So I don't know, there's a bunch of things going on there. And a lot of people weren't happy with it. But nonetheless, send me some emails if you got some comments. And we'll get into what you guys thought about the show. I had a great time. I had a great time seeing everybody, hanging out and saying hello. And if you remember on the last podcast, that's what I said I was looking forward to. It was going to be a big-ass family reunion, and that's exactly what it was. It was cool to be there. I'll tell you this, man. When I went out there, that's the first time I've been out in front of a crowd in quite some time. But when I went out there just to do a little piece of business, man, I walked down there, hit 4 turnbuckles, was standing there in front of Vince. Hell, I blew up. And I didn't do anything physical. I've been doing cardio. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the adrenaline spike. I'm talking about the surge in emotions, how jacked up I was just to be there and to get that kind of pop. It sends your heart into overdrive. And I tell you what, I was standing there in front of Vince. I was trying to look like I was very calm, cool, and collected. And I was. I'm Stone Cold Steve Austin. But believe me, man, I mean, the adrenaline was flowing, and I was just high as a kite from that type of pop, being in front of a crowd and feeling that electricity. Make no mistake, I'm not talking about drugs. I'm talking about the high of that crowd and that adrenaline. It was just phenomenal. Had a great time. Anyway, I'll stop beating a dead horse. I'm going to do another podcast because I'm going to talk about my travel up there, and I'm going to talk about the stay in my room the night I went out before Monday Night Raw. That Sunday night, went out there and had a few whiskeys with the boxer, guy who used to box. Stayed out way too late and had a real cluster ordering breakfast the next morning. But I'm going to do that on a separate podcast. I just want to tell you guys I enjoyed being at Monday Night Raw. I still love the business. I wish all the guys and girls safe travels, flat back landings, and full houses. I'll tell you about my experience. I just want to tell you that I appreciate the pop that I got out there at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn there. And I'd been wanting to go to the Barclays Center because I'd seen a couple of the pay-per-views coming from there. And, of course, the most memorable that comes to mind, two of my favorites, the Legit Boss, Sasha Banks, and the Hugger, Bayley, when they ripped it up 2-3 years ago. That match is still vivid in my head, so I wanted to feel what that crowd felt like when I went out there to watch those ladies go out there and have that badass match. That's one of the buildings that I wanted to go to, and now I can cross that off my list. Anyway, let's get on with it. I got part two with badass Billy Gunn, my old travel partner. You're going to get a couple more stories. We're going to go back to New Orleans. We're going to talk more about the business and shoot the breeze. Hanging out with Billy and Colton was some of the most fun I've had over here at 317 Gimmick Street in quite some time, and I enjoyed them stopping by. Before we get to Billy, hey, man, I got to tell you guys about Hims. Hey, man, it's a new year, 2018. It's a chance to make a new impression. And that means keeping your hair in order and becoming the handsomest SOB the world's ever seen. The bottom line is men want to keep their hair and take care of themselves. Now, hassle-free prevention and solutions now exist with Hims. Hims is the wellness brand for the modern man. A one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness. Making men's personal care trusted, easy, and affordable. Hims offers FDA-approved medical-grade products, personalized recommendations, plus convenient, confidential online consultation with a licensed doctor. Ain't no pharmacy lines, ain't no waiting room. The products are shipped directly to your door. And Hims passes big savings along to you, offering prescription and generic for just a fraction of the price. Sound treatment and prevention backed by medicine and science. Look better, feel better, do better with Hims. For listeners of the Steve Austin Show Unleashed, get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 while supplies last. This would cost you hundreds of dollars if you went to a doctor's office or a pharmacy. So what are you waiting for? Save some damn money and save your damn hair. Just go to forhims.com/unleashed for all the details. That's forhims.com/unleashed. And stomp a mud hole into hair loss and walk it dry. One more time, forhims.com/unleashed to get yourself a trial month for just $5.
All the big names are on Podcast One Sportsnet, the home of Dan Patrick.
If I'm hanging out with any of the Kardashians, I'm hanging out with Khloe.
As well as news shows like Red Circle Sports with Dennis Miller.
Goodell has become completely full of it.
Riggle's Picks with Rob Riggle and Sarah Tiana.
Do you know the difference between a million and a billion?
The B.
And AP Sports Weekly with Jim Litke.
Have you guys ever considered trading Alabama for the Cleveland Browns?
All this and more exclusively on PodcastOneSports.com and the Podcast One app.
This is Steve Austin Unleashed.
As far as getting into the wrestling business, how long was the transition period? Okay, rodeo's over.
Yeah.
Running around and dying.
It was long gone. It was
so
gone.
That was in Texas, or you stayed in Texas?
No, I went to California. As soon as I quit there, I came back to Florida. When I came back to Florida, I was working in a gym with a buddy of mine that I grew up with that had a gym, and Ron and Don actually walked in there, and I'd known them forever anyway. Went to different high schools at the same time, but we kind of interchanged a couple of times. And they were running Nashville and Memphis and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Probably my best friends in the business other than Road Dogg and, you know, Bob and that, you know, but it's just, they're down to earth guys, super cool. I mean, never have a bad word to say about anything.
Yep.
Just don't say bad things about them and let them hear about it. But they came in, they were working Memphis, that territory right there, and they told me they're wrestling. I almost peed in my pants. I was laughing so hard. I went, "You bunch of sissies, brother." So, but that, because I knew nothing about it, I'd never watched it, not a lick of it. But then once they took me and they did that and kind of got, I went, "This is awesome." Because they're not smarting me up, because, you know, back in the day, it was like, "Hey, you have to go through a long process before we actually let you in the door and let you know actually what's going on."
Right.
So we're just going to beat the shit out of you.
But you like the physicality of it.
I do. I've always been a physical kind of athletic. And then all of a sudden, when I realized I could have all this in one sport, And the cool thing that I've learned is you never learn it all. You never know it all. So you're constantly learning and developing so that it never gets bored. It never gets boring.
So when did you meet Bart Gunn?
When I went to, like, Ron and Don were only coming into town every so often, and I was, like, chomping at the bit to do this now, like, on my off, you know, when I, like, at night or whenever I was off work or whatever, so I'm, like, chomping at the bit to know more. So Eddie Mansfield, who had a, he had his school, but nobody ever went to, except for Bart.
Yeah.
And then he went, and I went, and we kind of met up, and we were the only ones that would ever come, and nobody else would come, nobody that would train or anything, so me and him were kind of self-teaching each other by watching stuff on TV, and then we get in there and implement it. But the problem with that is you have no rhyme or reason why you're doing it. You're just doing it because it looks really cool.
Right.
So that lacks.
You know, you see the moves, you're executing moves, you just don't know why you do them. So there's the void of psychology.
Yes, there's no psychology right. whatsoever. Here's a spot without hitting, because we're not really kind of there yet or doing anything dangerous. Here's a spot that looks really cool. Okay, I'm going to run it, and you be the guy that takes it all. And then you run it, and I'll be the guy that takes it all. So it's kind of like that kind of lingo. Until Blackjack Mulligan comes around and goes, okay, fellas, whoa, settle down here. And then he kind of got us kind of kicking a little bit.
He smartened you up? I mean,
yeah, smartened us up. We were smartened up because we kind of knew.
Yeah, but I mean, he gave you, here's some 101 psychology.
Yes, very much so.
Here's why you're doing it.
Yes, very much so. And taking all that stuff that we don't need to do, and then here, let's add this.
Hey, man, you guys are both big athletic guys back in the day and to this day. But Bart, when they started doing the Bra for It All or Bra for All, whatever the hell it was called, all of a sudden, man, you know, I think they wanted Dr. Death, Steve Williams, to win the thing.
Of course they did.
Dude, here comes Bart.
And I told JR from the get-go, don't put Bart in it. I told him from the start, I said, don't put him in it. Because he's going to crush everybody.
Okay, well, give me the backstory, because I heard that he was a bad stick of wood in his neighborhood or scene in Florida. What was up?
Yeah. Like when Mike says, so when Mike walked in any place in Titusville, people separate like the Red Sea. Because he, although probably one of the nicest guys on planet, he's another one. Super nice, easy going. But once he gets going, just go away. Go, because some really bad shit's about to happen. Like, it's not good. Like, I've heard so many stories about him cleaning places out. I've seen him clean. He was at one club in Orlando, and I think it was like 15 guys until he got a bottle stuck in his side. If you notice, he has that scar on his side. That's where he had a Boone's Farm bottle shoved in his side and still whipped 10 guys and then just looked down and went, hey, where'd that come from? Like, he's just that. He's that guy. And when they started putting that all together and he was in, I just started laughing. And, of course, JR, loved JR to death. This was a Steve Williams thing. This, because he's just kind of coming in the business. It's kind of get him because he's had that reputation. But I just think he was just too deep. I mean, Steve was a badass.
But he's more All-American wrestler.
Yes. So Bart's that. Now you can wrestle and hit. They figured, okay, that'll balance out. We actually have to get to the wrestling part, but Bart's knocking people out before they even get to that part. So I think it was a disaster all around. And then you put him in there with, you know, the end result is WrestleMania with Butterbean. You put him in there with a professional fighter, and it's kind of, let's put an end to Bart's reign, which to this day, Bart still wants to fight him.
Yeah, but I'd heard, and you can clarify this, but I'd heard that because he was going to fight Butterbean, who was a boxer with technique, and Bart was just a fighter with a lot of power and a heavy right hand. Probably just nasty to begin with. But I'd heard that he had started taking some boxing lessons.
That's
got in his head.
Exactly. That's exactly where everything went awry. There was no part of boxing and no part of finesse. And it was, okay, ding, ding, and start swinging. So whenever they started to set this up, they said, hey, we're going to get you ready for this. We're going to have you go do less. So now he's taking boxing less. So he comes out trying to box, and Butterbean, you know, just ducks his heads and slings him. Like, that's, I think that's what bothers Bart the most, is that he knows that messed it up. That was the thing that put the brakes on it, because he went in there going, oh, so now I have to fight him. Now I have to go learn how to box and move my feet and stuff. No, that ain't what brought you to the dance. Those big old mittens you got brought to you here. Just sling them around.
What's he doing now?
He was a master electrician out at the Cape.
That's awesome.
Before he started getting into wrestling. Then he got into wrestling, but then when he got out, he did this stint in Japan, was a big, huge deal over there in Japan for about 8-9 years, I think. And then came back and redid all his licensing, and now he's a master electrician again, loving life.
Is he still training? He's still a big dude?
He's about 305, and he's just monstrous. He's always, like, he's so long-waisted. But his shoulders are, he's just.
Oh, dude, that dude's got the broadest shoulders. I mean,
he's so big.
His frame.
Yes.
It's like an NFL defensive end frame. I mean,
he's big.
You can see him on TV, but yeah, if he fell out that frame, I could imagine.
Yeah.
Strong?
Very. He's always been very strong.
So is he done? Is he not going back and forth to Japan anymore?
No, he doesn't do
it. He's happy?
No, he don't care. We do a couple of signings once in a while. If he wants to, he'll do some signings, but he's over it. He's done. He's happy. He's got, his life is there, and it's all good.
Huh.
We all grow up. I'm still trying to get there, but.
What are you doing now? Because last time I saw you, it was New Japan.
Yeah, G1 special here in Long Beach. Yeah. I just work on the weekends. I love what I do. I go have fun. I'm not fooling anybody of what I'm doing. I give the people exactly what they want to see. And I'm having fun again and digging what I do. And people actually want to see me because I'm busier now than ever.
So how are you feeling?
I feel okay. I mean, other than
jamming my neck. Did you have a neck surgery?
Yeah.
What'd you get done? Yeah, what'd you get done?
Yeah, dissection and fusion of 6 and 7.
Okay, 3 and 4.
Yeah.
What happened?
It was in the Arco Arena in Sacramento, California. We were working Tom Pritchard and
Candido. Okay.
So we were doing that thing with Sonny. It was kind of, we were getting in the groove with doing the thing with Sonny. We were doing this spot. She jumps up. I hit the ropes, accidentally knock her off, go, oh, my God. I go down to the floor. I go check on her because it's me that's supposed to be in this infatuation spot with her. And Tom comes off the top and just caught me in the back of the neck. And I hit the ground, and a lightning bolt shot from my ass clear across the building. It's like, oh, my God. I've never had that happen. Like stingers and stuff. Normally, I'm just knocked out before that happens, so I never feel them. But I felt that and just went, oh, whoa. That's bad. Something's not right. So I worked about two, three more days like that. And then my left side kept going worse and worse and worse and worse.
Atrophy, weakness?
Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Then I went home and went and saw a neurologist or whatever. And they literally took me right then and said, you got to go. Like right now. Because he said it was so bad shattered that there was a piece pushing on my spinal cord. He said, you could just step off a curb or something and it go. And I went, oh, well, maybe we go fix this then.
Hey, how was your downtime and how long was it?
It was about 6 months because I wasn't allowed to stay gone that long. It was just, it was 95. Like the company hadn't like really got hot yet or do anything. So it's like, if you want to keep your job, we get it. Your neck's hurt, but you might want to come back.
Dude, a little bit of pressure. Here's the thing. I guarantee you didn't get no paychecks.
I didn't get any paychecks.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
Not on my surgery in 1999, 2000, whenever I got fused up. This was before they would start paying the guys, and this goes back. I mean, that's almost like the Stone Ages compared to now, but right. You know, these days everything's all covered. But back in the day, dude, when I had my next surgery, I was gone for about a year, zero. I know I got a royalty check every quarter,
right.
But I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
And so that's, I was like.
That was kind of the thing, too. So
did you have any reservations? You say, hey man, maybe I ought to go do something else.
No, because I had it in my brain that things are going to happen. Like, and I think I got that from riding bulls and stuff. You just know things are going to happen. You just hope it doesn't happen today.
Right.
It's the same thing with wrestling. We do. People don't realize what we actually do and the physicality and all the athleticism and stuff that we do. Probably, if not the best athletes on planet Earth when you're
right
to go. So, but when you do that, things are going to happen. Like, our bodies are not made to bounce off whatever people call the mat or the ring. They're not meant to bounce off of that for 20, 30, 45 minutes every single day.
Back in the day, you know, when I got dropped on my head and, you know, with the thing with Owen, God rest his soul. And so anyway, dude, that jacked me up. I mean, it was heavy duty, but I was just thinking, I gotta finish this match and nothing would work. So anyway, you know the deal. I rolled him up, called it in the ring and got out. And I remember There's a picture of me sitting backstage. This is Meadowlands Arena, East Rutherford, New Jersey. I used to really enjoy that building. Hated Nassau. Nassau Coliseum. Yeah. I mean, I love it. I love the people there, but man, they talk about a heel town. Yeah. As a baby face, you never want to make a comeback at Nassau Coliseum. But anyway, so there I was. And there's a picture. And Dr. Ramaskavage, you remember him? We won't go into details. He's sitting there checking on me. Dude, I'm sure I'm concussed. I always stayed razor sharp. But my anterior, I was jacked up, just totally effed up. And I'm sitting there, so they're going to take me by the ambulance to the hospital. You know, there I go, I get x-rayed or whatever. No MRIs, you know, nothing's broken.
Right.
I bruised my spinal cord. I got a bunch of stuff going on, but, you know, I walk outside the hospital. Ain't nobody from the company come with me. I'm sitting there, I'm all messed up, and it's like three girls had followed the ambulance to the hospital. I walked out. There wasn't no support there. You know, Steve, you need to ride back to the hotel? Yeah. Got in the car with them. They took me by the liquor store. I got a 12-pack of Budweiser. They took me back to the Holiday Inn right there by Newark Airport, wherever you stay there.
Yeah.
I remember, dude, I was effed up, leaning against, you know, the headboard of my bed. And my anterior delts were on fire. They'd burned for a couple of months like that. And, you know, I was going to go to Raw the next day in Philly. I got a rental car and drove myself. But I was traumatized.
Yeah.
I just sit there and drank that 12-pack of beer. I'll never forget it. I forgot a lot of things about my career, but I was sitting drinking that goddamn 12-pack. I'm thinking, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, it was a rough ride.
Yeah.
But anyway, my point is, I don't want to dwell on myself, but you've been around in the current system because you were down there in Florida and you were part of the show. It's changed so much because, you know, they started employing the trainers right before I left. But,
yes.
Dude, back here, especially when I broke in, that was the Stone Ages. I broke in 89, 90. When'd you break in?
Right around 90, 91. Because I didn't train very long before we got hired.
Yeah. Okay. So, but see, so all of a sudden you come in and y'all were the, goddamn the Cowboys. Smoking guns.
Smoking guns.
You and Bart. The landscape then versus the landscape now from a medical or standpoint.
Yeah, well, you harped on it all the time with the towel around the neck and jerking your...
Harley, yeah.
I actually have... Al Snow used to do that and do all that. And then we have guys getting you walking the locker room going, hey, my ankle hurts. Does anybody know how to tape an ankle? Maybe anybody? And then you get the worst tape job you could ever, but you don't want to do it yourself, right? They just go, no, just pull your toes back and then let me tape. It's like, just the worst job ever. But we all think it's good. I'm glad too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because it prolongs everybody's career, makes everybody feel better and stuff. But yeah, we're just running. And running and running.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's an actual sporting event, just as physical in a different fashion than a football game. But, I mean, it's a sporting event. I mean, guys are out there, gals out there competing. Yeah. I mean, and things are going to go wrong in that ring, and they always do. I remember one time we was working. You might have been there. We was working Hull, Ontario. It was a B-town. It was like a six-man tag, and we all kind of got together and said, hey, man, ain't nobody here. Everybody just got to be cool. Nobody gets hurt. Triple H blows out a wheel, hitting the ropes.
Yeah.
Just hitting the ropes. It's the little things.
It is the little. Like we talked about before, Lane Frost's deal, just the little things before the big one. And you go to do these down, nothing not to take away from that town. But it's just not like a garden or a Staples. But you want to go on. You still want to give the people what you want to give them. Because that's always been my thing. It's just because we only got like 5,000 and we were expecting 50,000 doesn't mean that the 5,000 get to suffer. Like, we're still going to go give them us and they're going to get us. But hey, let's maybe take the poncho upside down lucha libre out of the equation.
And you're going to get a few more tests of strength.
Yes.
You're going to get some guys, we would say. But go ahead, but, you know, here's the thing about the boys. You know, when you're traveling around, when you go back to, you know, where wrestling basically came from, the circuses, right? And so all of a sudden it comes in and, you know, or there's no high spots back in the day. And then all of a sudden there's a couple of high spots. And now there's, you know, the evolution of the business has happened with the guys in this generation to what we were doing. Whole different ballgame,
yes.
You know, much more
yes.
athletic.
Yes.
But the things you do is my point to try to stay healthy and on the road is like you said, Al Snow. I love Al Snow, but he ain't a doctor. Harley Race, 8-time world champion. He ain't a doctor, but come here, kid. And so you put your trust in these dudes or these self-made chiropractors.
Yes,
or
witch doctors. Fuji was big on that, too. Was he? Was our, he was the chiropractor.
But at least he's got a background that you would just think, not just because he's Oriental or Japanese. Yeah, it sounds like it could be a doctor.
You have something kind of or about you that I go, I trust you with my spine right now.
Yeah, right now. It's just so I can go on the ring. But as the boys leaning on the boys, I'll never forget traveling with Diamond Dallas Page. Me and Mick Foley, Diamond Dallas Page, we would heal up a room. That means three people in a room. And how does that work?
Yeah.
How does that work? If there's a double bed. Well, double bed, two senior guys get the beds.
Oh, yeah.
Greenhorn. And Dallas was 10 years older than both of us.
Yeah.
Dallas had the cop because he had no seniority. But he always had a little gimmick thing, like, you know, those things you just kind of like zap, you know, just psh, like a, it's like a nerve depressor. Or just a little thing, you pull the trigger on it, it's not an injection. It's a little tap.
Yeah.
Like you do it on a nerve or whatever. He had those. He had ice bags for every joint on his body, and he's walking around the room naked. He's got a pack on every joint, both shoulders, both elbows, both knees.
Yeah.
And I'm over here drinking a beer. Mick don't drink. He's eating a chocolate chip cookie. And I'm like, man, I ain't got no ice. I could damn near just put a cold beer underneath one of Dallas's ice packs and keep my beer cold. It was ridiculous. But he was a guy, and I give him credit. He's one of my best friends for being, taking care of his goddamn body.
Yeah.
Do you think, wait, dude, you're all put together. I was running pretty hard. For a while there, just as far as the activities.
Yeah.
You ever get caught up in that? Because I think I could have taken better care of myself. Now, my spinal injuries were what they were, but I think I could have taken a little bit better care of myself.
I think that I've kind of, like, my training's different. How I take care of my body's different. Yes, I'm a recovering addict, so I've been clean for 7 years. But when you hurt and you don't think about it too much, there's easier ways to do it. So I can just take this and I don't have to worry about going and get a massage or going to a chiropractor or going to a doctor. I just mask it with this. So you mask it so long and then it catches up with you so-and-so. But nowadays, that's not an option. So now I look more into what I do. I get stretched twice a week by a stretchologist. I go get massages. My training, Matt Witch is my trainer. Has a place in Orlando, literally right down the road from my house. He helps me with different ways of training, going about training different. Because we know that we ache and we hurt doesn't mean that I'm not going to the gym. I'm going to the gym. I just have to know how to work around it. Like back in the day when you walk in the gym, you load a bunch of weights on there. This is my max. That's about it. Like 315, 405 or something. You start wrapping it up. You put it away. You go grab the paper and you go out and go eat. Like that's how much thought. Some of us put it, some of us were different, but me, I just go in, lift as heavy as I can, because nothing hurt. I was invincible at that time. But now now doing what I want to do and being on the road and still, I have to do alternative ways to take care of myself.
Dude, when you say you were an addict, what did you get hooked on?
Pills.
Vicks?
Yeah, everything. Painkillers, somas, the whole nine.
How did that spin up for you? Because I was sitting there talking to Dale Wilkes a couple years ago. He said it's taking like 60 perks a day. And I said, dude, that's impossible. He goes, no, it ain't. He goes, I was doing it. I had however many doctors doing the thing.
Yeah, you doctor hunt. You have scripts all over the place. You buy them from people that you don't even know and hope to God that they're working. It was just because it was really bad. I left the company. It was just everything was going awry. That one thing was going downhill. And all addicts do in my case, because that's all I talk about, is I'm just trying to cover things up. I don't want to think about them. But then when I come out of that, they're still there. But you just keep covering and they never go away and they get worse and worse and worse. So your consumption goes more and more and more. I mean, you're just eating, I couldn't keep pills around for nothing. Like going through 100 somas in 3 days. That's insane.
That is insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Dude, back in the day, if a guy had a backpack or a fanny pack, he could take his shit off, and by the rattle of what he had in his pack, I swear to you, again, you can back me on this. By the rattle of what he had in his bag, you could tell what he was carrying.
Dude, and the whole locker room would come to attention. Oh, yeah. You could hear
Ammons had a rattle, Soma, Vikes, Perks. They all had a different rattle.
Yeah.
I was laughing at myself a couple of years ago. I just bought my ranch down here in South Texas. Since 2007, I'd already been out of business 4 or 5 years. I kind of retired, and I was doing that co-GM thing, and I was out of business. Anyway, I was down at my ranch, and I took my backpack off, and I hear the rattle of the pills. And, you know, it was like a whole different thing from back in the day, because back in the day, man, I'd have had something where I could put an elephant to sleep, make an elephant jump over the moon, make anything stop hurting. You know, this time when I throw the, you know, it's a bottle of maybe some aspirin, some Zantac 150, vitamin D, maybe some Viagra, but ain't nothing in there for no pain.
Yeah, no good. Yeah, nothing of any good.
It was funny because, like, you would get hurt. You would use something when you got hurt, but then... Well, I remember my first road trip. Dude, I was in college. I grew up in a small town in South Texas. I get to college. I'm in North Texas State. I get in wrestling business, right? I've been through wrestling school. They didn't teach me about any of that stuff in wrestling school. They don't teach you how to do a blade job, take a chair shop, eat pills. And that's on the job.
Yeah, that's
so. But as far as the pill thing goes, I'm riding down the road. We're going to do a shot in Oklahoma. The person I'm riding with says, "Hey, man, you want a bike?" I'm an athlete. You know, long blonde hair, pretty jacked up at the time, feel good. I mean, what's a bike? He said, "A Vicodin. What's it for?" "For pain. I'm not in pain." "No, it'll give you a buzz." Yeah. Okay, so you know, I took a bike.
Yeah.
But I never got spun off on them. I was lucky in that regard. Alcohol was my thing, and that's what I had a good time with. But it's those things, man, all of a sudden you could be from, shit, what's that, Wizard of Oz thing. You're not
Kansas anymore.
Yeah, well, whatever. You know, all of a sudden, you're in the wrestling business. You get a bunch of shit thrown at you.
It's different for everybody. You know, it's not you, because I never did any drugs growing up, like at all, because I was always petrified.
Exactly.
My dad would find out and he'd beat the life out of me. And it was kind of the same thing. It was you get in the business, all of a sudden, Halcyons were a big thing. That's you take them and you're out for days. I mean, that like the first time I tried that was an overseas trip. I couldn't ever wake up the whole 2 weeks I was there. So I was like, that's not going to happen. But then it's just, that's what I mean. It's just different for everybody. Some people can take stuff and not worry about it. And then some people take it for not what they're supposed to take it for. Yeah. And they can't quit taking it.
Hey, man, what do you think about it? Moving on from that, because you've recovered, whatever happened. That was just to cover it. Just in talking about the business. When did someone tell you, "Hey, man, we need to get some color on you"?
It wasn't until I got to TNA. I never did that. The only time I've ever been busted up is when, like, for real. Like, this was never an option for me.
Really?
Like, I never had any desire, never wanted to. Some people would ask me, I go, "I don't know how to do it, and I'm not going to do it." But I'm a little bit more diplomatic than that when
right.
I was asked when I was first breaking in, because I didn't, like, I was never in that era. I was kind of in it, but I was never there long enough. I literally went from training going straight into WWE. So, like, that transition, and I was at the point when I was there, I was never in those matches where you had to get that,
mm-hmm.
right? And it was very rare, even back then in WWE, that you would ever do that. But and then I left there in 2004 and then went to TNA, and they asked me to do it with Kevin Nash in a First Blood match where, like, I have it, but then Jeff runs down and hits him and he gets it, but the ref sees it on him and not me first. The whole skit. So I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm petulant and I don't want to do it. But I've heard, you know, by now I've kind of smartened up to the thing. So I go, okay, I need someone to make this. Who do I get to make it? None other than Dustin Reynolds. which later on to come find out when Dusty asked, because I literally almost cut my head off, because he made one like he would make for him,
right?
Like, some of them have those things so deep that they got to make it bigger. Well, I hit, like, I did the post, he did the snake eyes deal, I hit the post because it doesn't have a thing on it, I get it, and it's just so the thing, I was supposed to get it. Like, they were supposed to slide me a towel, wipe it off. The ref looks at me, looks back at Kevin, because that's where he gets jumped and gets color. But I've got it, like, everywhere. And so we still do the same finish. I come back, Dusty goes, "Kid, what the flipping flop? What are you doing? Who made that for you?" I said, "Dustin." And he goes, "Oh, Jesus Christ. Kid, the fresh head. You're not supposed to," you know, so it was... Like, that was the first time and only time I've ever done that.
We was working, was it Phoenix? I can't remember the name of the town. I told him the story so many times. He was working. Grizzly Smith was a damn road agent. And I think it was down in WCW still. And wasn't nobody at the show. And me and Dustin used to love to work with each other. We were big into the color. Dustin goes and he tells Grizz, he goes, Grizz, it's a house show. It's a house show. Ain't nobody there. You think me and Steve might get a little color? All of a sudden, it's like the best idea in the world. Yeah. Might be a good idea. Go ahead. Sure enough, me and Dustin make a couple of hatchets, go out there. I'm a heel. He's a baby. I mean, we're ripping the place up, right? He's bleeding like a stuck pig. I'm bleeding like a stuck pig. We finish the match. We come back. We're all happy with ourselves. Lex Luger walks around the corner, and he just looks at us because it looks like we've just been massacred. And the look on his face said it all.
Yeah.
He did not get it. He didn't understand what just happened. Why would you do such a thing?
Yeah.
You still deal when I first broke in USWA. I was working with Superstar Bill Dundee. You ever work with him?
No.
He's awesome. Yeah. 5'7", about 200 pounds. And all of a sudden I go to the territory. I'm thinking, okay, I'm 250. He's 205. He's 5'7". I guess I'm going to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Didn't happen like that.
No.
Bill got his shit in. And Bill didn't work like a cruiserweight. Wait, he worked like main event style, you know, regular style stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'd do a deal where we'd have a first blood match. Be a deal where, you know, Bill would always get his stuff in. But just kind of through the physicality of the match, I'd do something to bust him open. But what he'd do, he'd go deep and get plenty of blood. And then when I went to go get him, he'd wipe the blood all over my face, so when Frank Morrell turned me around, I was the one with the blood.
That's
although he was busted open, he would just roll out of the ring, take the wing, and go to the back. And me, like, Martin, now see, here's the thing. I'm just saying, dude, you've got a handful of blood, and you're talking about an hour and a half earlier about me, you touching my water.
Yes.
And now a guy's wiping his blood on my face so I can get, you know, I can lose the first blood match. How stupid is that?
Yeah. That's it.
But that was the mentality back in the day.
It was. And you're not thinking of that. You're just thinking of what's best for the match and how are we going to get this and what is our finish for this. So you don't realize, like, when you actually sit down and go, you're going to rub your blood all over me, and then I'm just going to go, all righty then. Yeah, nowadays that would never happen.
Oh,
ever.
No, but I'm just thinking, okay.
Like,
well.
But even back in the day when they would get it all the time and they're still wrestling, it's going in your face, in your mouth, you're eating, swallowing, it's in your eyes. All like, you're just, like, you don't even think, wow, where has your shit been at? Like,
but I was just thinking at the time, okay, man, I'm a wrestler. This is what we do.
Yeah.
These days, when I look back at some of the things we used to do, it's like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
What was your head?
You wonder why your blood's not blue.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to True Car. Now, if you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Well, introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Hey man, you're going to need car insurance for that new vehicle. Go to Geico.com and in 15 minutes you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars in car insurance at Geico.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
Hey, it's Rob Riggle.
And Sarah Tiana.
And you are listening to Riggle's Pick.
Yeah, and a ham horn. And we have a new podcast. You can find our show exclusively on the Podcast One app, on PodcastOneSports.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Every Thursday, we're going to sit around and we're going to talk about the things that really excite us, like life, comedy, sports, a lot of sports.
Ourselves.
A lot of Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope you join us.
Before we get to the rest of my interview with Billy Gunn, let me give a quick shout out to DDP Yoga. DDP Yoga is a kick-ass cardio workout and will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core, all with minimal joint impact. Sign up for the DDPY app or go to ddpyoga.com for 20% off all DVDs and DDPY swag.
This is Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Were you there on the first Monday Night Raw?
I don't know if it was the first one, but I know it was one of the first ones.
And you were there at the Manhattan Center?
Yes, yes. Because the only thing I remember is we were scared to death. It's like your first match on like real TV. I was sitting there, and I don't know, there was this guy in the very front row. He's at all the New York shows and stuff. I forget what his name, kind of light-skinned.
I remember.
Yeah, sitting behind me. And he's going, Billy, like in a really nice tone, like he's, you know, and me, I'm not wanting to turn away from the ring at all because everything I know is this way, right? But I go, you know what, let me just kind of maybe look over there. I look over at him and he just jumps out of his seat and goes, F you just, I just turned right back around and grabbed the rope and went, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? Like it was like the worst feeling ever because I just, big smile, big happy, you know, good guy, Cowboys. And then you turn around and then he just screams the F you at you, just drops it on you on TV.
I can't remember that guy's name. It's like two syllables. Like
I want to say it's kind of a Germanish, kind of a foreign.
I was reading an article about Shawn Michaels talking about, you know, when they first started doing the Monday Night Raws. And it was an interesting transition. And I consider, I think you and I were really, really good workers. I consider Sean to be one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, me too.
And so when you sit there and hear Sean go back and talk about working on live, you know, TV, because, I mean, dude, this is pretty cutting edge. And he's kind of like blown away by it. But obviously, you know, he kind of caught on real quick and did real great. But he was talking about the transition or just the magnitude of it. And you look back, you know, now it's been 25 years. But like you said, who'd have thunk it?
Yeah,
and I remember when I got there, and all of a sudden, it was different for me, I think, because I'd been in the business, you know, 7.5 years, and all of a sudden, I'm going to do Monday Night Raw, and I'd been watching it on TV. Mm-hmm. I don't really think the nerves were there. I was a ringmaster. It was a suck-ass gimmick to begin with, but it was interesting. Do you think, what do you think about that show? It's been the longest-running episodic television show in history. And they were kind of comparing it, not in an athletic endeavor, but to Saturday Night Live, which takes an offseason, which been continuous running. Did you think back in the day that this shit was going to continue for 25 years?
No, I didn't. I don't know what it was doing. I just knew that I had a job, and it was really fun because they were paying me pretty good money. They could have paid me $100 bit more than I'd ever made in my life anyway. But they were paying me to travel around the country and entertain people. But then, and they're putting you on TV. Like, you're on TV for a Florida guy that just watched TV. Now I'm on TV was the greatest thing ever. I never really looked into depth going, like, I can't recall, because I know some people can recall everything. I can't recall anything that ever happened in my career. I never thought that away. But when you look at it, you go, that's pretty good. I mean, that's a long time to be putting one show, a show on TV for that long.
And in different locations. Rain, sleet, or snow, that sumbitch is on the air.
And it's such a production, but they have it down to a science. I mean, they roll all, whatever, 18, 20 trucks up into a building, and it's put together quick.
Remember back in the day when we was riding up down the road in all them cars, booking the territory, and, you know, we started making money, he was riding up, and, you know, in Lincolns and Cadillacs, and, you know, dude, I wish I'd been the guy that thought about the tour bus idea back in the day.
Oh.
You know, because that would have been cool.
Yeah, it would have been really cool, but also it would have been a big disaster.
I'd have wound up driving a tour bus in a real bad state. When we go to Monday Night Raw, I think you're going to be in the Manhattan Center. I don't know where I'm going to be. I don't know nothing. I'll probably be at the Barclay, but I'm just looking forward to seeing all the guys and girls. I'm looking forward to be on TV in what capacity, I don't know. You will have known after this podcast airs, but, man, I'm just looking forward to seeing everybody.
Yeah, it's you know what it is, and I especially dig it for the fans, and I know that sounds so cliche, but it really isn't. That's what I look forward to, because it's such a feel-good moment, because as you know, I'm sure you hear it, attitude era. That's what everybody wants. They either want it to go back to that, which it never will, or they want it to be that, or they want to relive it somehow. Or now when people see me, the most thing that I hear is, it's so cool to actually get to see one of our favorites wrestle, and I get to watch it with my son, just like me and Colton went and trained at other Golds today. It's awesome feeling to do that with your kids, because most of the time, all the good stuff is so far past, you're only showing them on YouTube or something like that, showing them what it used to be like. But it's everybody getting together, that feel-good moment of seeing what used to be, and I'm not saying good or bad or whatever right. It is for you, whatever it is personally for you, that's the cool thing. And yeah, it is cool to see everybody and kind of catch up and stuff like that, but it's just such a feel-good moment that people, it's the pops will be ridiculous. It'll be a Minnesota Viking pop. See what I did there?
Yep.
Yeah.
Road Warrior.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the day, I was in WCW. I was going to get a singles push with Harley Race as my manager with the U.S. title. All of a sudden, Brian Pillman comes up to me and goes, "Hey, kid, we need to come up with a finish. We're a tag team now." Bullshit. I'm doing a singles run with Harley. Now I'm going to talk to Dusty. We need to come up with a finish. So I turned into a tag team, which ended up being the Hollywood Blondes with Flying Brian, and I had a lot of fun doing that. You guys were clipping along, you and Bart, and then that dissolved. All of a sudden, you know, next thing I know, I mean, it's the Attitude Era. You and Road Dogg hook up. Y'all are the New Age Outlaws. Who hooked y'all up? How did that come to be? Who came up with the name?
I guess JR and Russo and them. It was just, we were really going nowhere. It was both of us, me and Brian. We were going nowhere. It was the Barton thing. They wanted to do some more stuff with me, and then the Rockabilly thing in between the New Age Outlaws, which was a disaster. Kind of almost right along ranks, probably top five, along with the Ringmaster. So that goes away. Me and Brian do our thing. All the office stuff. It was Russo and Pritchard and those guys and people coming along. These two, we're going to get rid of them anyway. We might as well stick them together. It feels like there's something. We just don't know, and they don't know either. But then when we got together, it was awesome. It was just crazy good.
When you look back now at all the stuff that you guys did, and then, you know, the stuff that I was doing, and then everything with DX, but just you and Road Dogg, it's very corporate now.
Yes.
But, dude, did you ever stop at any point in time and think, man, what are we doing? I mean, this is some crazy shit. Because I didn't. I thought it was par for the course.
It went so fast and furious. It was just seemed like it started and was over. And the only thing I'm thinking is, where did that go? It was just so, like, it was funny because somebody, like, some people can recall what they've done since they got in the business and been in the business 50 years. I'm not one of them.
Me neither.
I had somebody, it was either a tweet or something, he said something about the 8-man that we all had. He goes,
Houston.
The where it was DX, but our special guest person was Savio Vega against you and Owen and some other people. And they go, hey, when Steve took that trash can and just slung it across the ring at you, how did you guys call that?
I'll tell you how that happened. You did, because go give me your end.
But it's like, I feel that's a lot of what's wrong today. Yeah. Is they can't look at somebody and know what's coming. Like, back then, we were all such in a groove that we just knew. I knew just from a look. I knew from what we were doing here. I know what's coming because I knew you. I saw you get it, and I knew you wanted to do something with it. So I just went, might as well be me.
No, dude, I remember like it was yesterday, and I can't remember shit either. But it was happening. I remember it was Mick and Terry, got tangled up in the barbed wire, and I'm like, the crowd was hot.
Oh, they
we had
were
them.
Insane.
They was ready to come. It started almost like it was starting to kill them off a little bit. Yeah. And I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm over. Because if there's one thing I can't hear with shit, but I can feel that crowd.
Yeah.
And I could hear them. And this was in Houston, Texas. And all of a sudden, man, somehow a trash can was introduced, and it was handed to me. I saw that trash can. I looked at you. You looked at me. And it wasn't even a signal. All of a sudden, you come barreling through. I pick up that trash can and wham, just strut. Dude, I don't practice throwing trash cans.
Yeah, no.
But I threw that thing with such force. It just hits you right there, picture perfect, where you'd want to be hit with a trash can.
I went back and watched it because I was like, okay, kind of vague, but watch it. And it was just like a Earl Hershiser shot.
Yeah.
Shoo, just pow.
And that was that, man, if anybody goes back and watches that match, and I'm going to recommend it at the podcast, that was not a call spot. It wasn't planned. That was an ad-lib thing.
Yeah.
And so it just happened.
And there's a lot of that I feel that's missing today, that you kind of don't have a feel with somebody when you get in a groove. And of course, you're working with so many different people now out here that they don't have time to get that. But I feel that's missing. Like they have to go over from A to B to C to D to the, like the funniest thing ever was Al Snow's 7.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that was awesome. But it's like that.
Yeah.
Like you just, like you said, you have to go out there and feel with the people. If you just listen, they'll take you in a direction that they all want to go, because at the end of the day, I'm here to entertain you. It ain't about my wrestling ability, because I'm not good at it. Shit.
Here's a great story for you. One time we were at Monday Night Raw. I can't remember where we were or what happened, but it was going to be a deal. For some reason, Bart was going to feed in, or I was working. No, I was working with Bart.
I know where you're. God. Dang it, you had to work him.
This is a payback.
I thought we were going to get away from this.
This is a payback when you whooped my ass in New Orleans when I swore on my life that I wasn't going to attack you again, and I attacked you again. I was talking about Billy Goats. So I'm working with Bart Gunn, and whoever's giving us a finish is giving us a finish. And, you're his partner, so you're just kind of being there, standing right there side by side. And said, all of a sudden, Steve will hit you with a Stone Cold Stunner by that time. And you popped. You're like, oh, this is great, because your partner was doing the favors for me that night. So you're gloating. You're the happiest guy in the world. And how'd they break it down to you?
And you're taking it too. Just feed in somewhere and you take it too. Because it was such an instant, spontaneous pop for me that he was getting it, because it seemed like I was getting everything. And then finally he's going to take something. And they just look at me and went, well, yeah, you'll feed in.
And then Billy, you'll feed in. Are you ribbing me?
Break the eyes. Holy cow.
That was great.
Oh, it was awesome.
But you took a great stunner. That's a compliment, dude.
Thanks. People say, well, Rock took it the best. No, he didn't. He overdid it. He popped, flipped upside down, and turned inside out, which, yes, it is very entertaining. The person who I thought took your finish the absolute best was Road Dogg. Just crazy. I mean, obviously, because he has a picture of you and him in Detroit in that Red Wings building of, like, there's a big, like, picture framed really nice and everything, and you busting it. But I always thought Brian took that the best.
He did. I mean, there's a lot of
The only thing second best to him ever is when I took it.
Dude, every now and then, if you would be in a cattywampus fashion, I remember I gave it to Goldberg, who's, like, y'all have different physiques, but, dude, just very rigid, And Bill kind of took it a little bit horizontally, kind of laid out for it. You know, you got to just take it on your knees or bend over like Razor would do it, or Benoit, you know. But he came down, he just crushed me like a pancake. There's a couple times your big ass, I mean, so we go, what am I going to do? Come back and say, dude, you kind of snugged me on the stunner. You know, it's not something you come back and bitch about. I hit you with my finish, but you snugged me by crunching my friggin' vertebrae on my whole back. There was a couple times, Billy, that you know, like my back would start hurting like a sumbitch and be like, you know, I'm giving like pretty much a whole roster of the stunner. And it's like, you know, what I do, tell Vince, hey, man, maybe we should lay off the stunner. His back's kind of hurting a little bit.
Yeah, because that's for sure thing you're going to tell him. Yeah, no, please, I don't want to hit my finish tonight, if you don't mind.
Hey, man, we was on that damn loop. We talked about it last time. We was in Red Deer, and I made up a name of a town. What was the name of that town I made up? Red Deer. It was in Canada. What was it?
Something?
Yeah, Moose Jaw.
Yeah, Moose Jaw. Yeah, okay.
Moose Jaw is not actually a town in Canada, but it's similar to the good. Yeah. The big brain on Colton.
Yeah.
We ended up in an Econo Lodge, and it's a pretty big ass, you know, shit box room. It was a bad room. And we were traveling, and we stopped at a bar. You remember the story?
Yeah. Made me dance.
And
And with the heavy duty.
Kick the DJ guy out. He goes, Stone Cold's here to spin some tunes. Get out of here. He's spinning tunes. He's making me and Bart go dance with people. Or I don't know if that.
No, I couldn't make you do anything, Billy. I couldn't make you. Colton.
It was highly suggested that if you're going to spin tunes, somebody's going to dance. And it's going to be you along with the bigger lady over there.
Dude, and girls from Moose Jaw need to come, dude.
Brother, they hemmed up eating some corn for a while.
Dude, I don't know. I don't remember what I was drinking. I think it was just straight up beer. I think it was at King. Kanoki, Kankakee, whatever that beer was. Kokanee, yes. Whatever it was. Yeah. It was a local beer. Man, God dang, we was hitting those damn beers. We had a spot show down there. There wasn't nobody there. We got back. We had to kick it up a little bit. And I don't know how I got the gumption to get in the DJ booth. And I damn sure ain't no DJ Jazzy Jeff.
No.
And I was over spinning those twos talking on the RF mic. And, you know, back then, I'm actually a pretty shy guy. But God dang, I was on fire that night. Y'all was out there just tearing up dance floor. And literally, there's only six people in the freaking club.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was funny because the kid that was running music is sitting at the bar enjoying himself here all over, trying to get half a headphone on with the mic and spinning tunes out to have a clue what you're doing after playing. Yeah, it was good.
What's your favorite story in the history of the business?
Gosh, I don't know. Favorite story in the history of the business that I was involved with?
Yeah, or just something that you vividly remember. Because like I said, you know, when we were down in Harley's basement, I will never forget that story when you're just smoking him. And his, dude, put the king over, for God's sake.
Yeah, no. I don't know. I don't. There's been so many. Like when you get, like as soon as I walk out your door, it'll come to me.
Right.
Like,
oh, yeah, here's how I want to cover this space with you before you leave. All of a sudden, you know, you're in town hanging out with your son, Colton, and I'm thinking, okay, Billy's going to come up. Because I didn't know you lived here, Colton, so I'm thinking, oh, they're going to Uber over here to have a rental car, just park right there by my 2003 Ford Focus Metallic P. You know, show up in a Ford F-150.
Yeah.
Yellow style. That's your truck.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So why'd you go F-150?
What was that?
Why'd you go F-150?
Because his dad's got a 250 6.7 diesel. That's why.
Really? What year?
Brand new.
17. Dude, I was thinking about getting a new truck, and then I put it off. But now I'm thinking about getting another one. And I've been driving those Duramaxes. Well, my dad has a Duramax, so when I go home, I drive that thing. I like that Chevy Duramax. I had a 2001 Power Stroke back before that. I started having all the headaches, hassles, and horse shit. And I know I got the bugs worked out now.
Yeah.
And it was a four-door long bed, four-wheel drive, two-tone, white and tan. That was that good-looking rig.
Yeah.
Had the front end leveled, front end replacement and rear bumper. It was a sharp-looking truck. And I know you're the king of four-wheel drive, dude, because you built some big-ass trucks back in the day. I remember them. And you would take them out and you'd get them just stupid muddy. And I was thinking, Jesus Christ, this guy's got a $70,000 rig and he's just out there thrashing it. And then it'd be just spick and span clean. So what persuaded you, or have you always been a Ford guy, or did you drive anything else?
No, I had a Colton actually got his. I've always been a Ford guy.
Okay.
And I had a car at one time, but that was just because, like, one of the trucks that I built, I tore to pieces and I was banned from getting another truck for a little while. So like $80,000 down the dumps, upside down. And I, you know, but other than that, I've always been a Ford guy. I had an F-150. He got one, and then
so I got an F-150 2014 once. I had a diesel before that, 350, and it had 270,000 miles on it. So I was like, all right, it's time. I got a job. It's time to get a new truck. So I got a 2014 used, but only had 10,000 miles on it, F-150. About 3 months later, he goes ahead and gets a 2015 F-150. It's got, you know, the nice tires on it. I guess he just wanted to be like me. I'm not sure, but
yeah. Because it was awesome. And the F-150s now are really nice. So I have a buddy that runs Built Vict in Huntsville, Texas, Wes Abbott, who I went to college with. They're the biggest F-Series dealers in Texas, or in the country, actually.
Right.
So I called him and said, hey, this is what I want done to it. Can you do it? And he said, for you, of course I can. So I get it, bring it back, love it. We have that big storm. Yeah, a gigantic tree goes right through the middle of it. So, of course, you can't. So now it's destroyed. They total it. So I call Wes and go, hey, and now I need something else. And I can't go back to the F-150. You just can't do it. So the new 6.7 diesel 250 came out. Now I had it all done the exact same way that I wanted. Tires blacked out. My complete roof opens up and stuff. So, yeah, now I have that. It's same as my F-150, just different.
Well, how are you liking it?
I love it. I love it.
Because look, I'm about to show you a picture. This is on Abbott. This is on Washington and Abbott Kinney. Silver FX4, 3/4 ton, 250, mm-hmm. 4-wheel drive, and that's a good looking pickup truck.
It is very. Yes.
Is yours 2-tone or 1-tone?
No, it's just all black.
Okay, so you do that. I mean, right there, that's silver.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good looking truck.
It is.
But I'm a Chevy guy. You think that's a better truck than a Chevy?
My opinion, yes. Yeah.
And it's all subjective and opinion.
Yes, it is very. But I've always been a Ford guy. I've had a Chevrolet. I've had a Tundra. I think Toyota Tundra. That was a good little truck. I had that for a couple of years. That's what I had right before I had the F-150. But I just seem to always go back to the Ford. I think the Ford diesels are probably the best on the market. I love my diesel. What is that one? Is that diesel?
That was a diesel.
Yeah.
And if I get something, it's going to be a diesel.
Yeah.
Because I want to pull stuff with it.
Yeah.
And these things these days are operating 900 some foot pounds of torque.
Yeah.
So the torque monsters back in the day when I was into the F-150s had a black 88-150. With the chrome wagon wheels, and man, that was just long bed, regular cab. They didn't have crew cabs back in. That was a bad son of a gun. I would just love it. 351, that thing got about 6 miles a gallon. It was rotten, but god dang, I love that truck. And then I got into the Z71s, got into a Chevy mode, and that's where I've been ever since. But then when I started, getting my old Broncos, not old, and 95s, 96s is what I got. And man, those things, I just love the way those things drive. But if you're going to get them on the road, like because of such short wheelbase and 1995 technology, you want to be driving something modern. And you can't pull nothing. I mean, you can pull stuff with it, but I'm talking about pulling some heavy shit with it.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna try the Duramax, but I'm thinking I've been spending a little bit more time in Nevada. And if you go off-road, I'm not going to take it off-roading per se, but when you go off-road with your trailer or whatever, you need a little bit of clearance. The only thing about that Chevy that bothers me, they ride a little bit low just as far as the undercarriage. Rear end, stuff like that. I don't want to just jack it all up. Dude, that's a stock ride height on that Ford right there.
Yeah. They've probably gotten some of the best clearance on the market.
Right.
Just straight out of the box.
But and some fender room.
You just put a leveling kit on it with 33s, that thing will look ridiculously good. And that's not that big of a deal. All you're doing is leveling everything out just to get a little bit more clearance and some 33s, just some good old 33s.
Right.
Ooh, buddy. They like putting 56s on it.
Remember back in the day when you were building those crazy trucks? Were you also doing sound in them?
No, I did a couple. No, it was more about when people looked at it and would go, oh my God, are you serious right now?
Yeah, but my point is, when you do a couple of sound systems, it's like, okay. After you do a couple of them, it's like all you need. These days, stock radios are so good.
They are.
And I don't listen to my shit anyway. I just put my headphones in and listen to that. But after you do a couple of sound systems, it's like, okay, this ain't happening no more.
Yeah, the one I did, I had 812s. Did a cut through into the bed and then had everything. It was insane. Like, just insane. And you go, I'll never top that. So now I've got the stock with just 210s under my back seat because there's that little, like the 17s have this little like thing that you can store stuff under the back seat. Well, with a couple bolts, that'll pop right out. And a box with 210s will sit right underneath of it. And that I just played that with my stock. It's perfect.
But dude, but just back in the day, some of the sound system, and like they're every now and then, living in Los Angeles, even probably where you're at, someone will pull up beside you and it's like, friggin' really? I'd been that guy. I'd have never built anything super powered.
Yeah.
But it's like, how long? I can't hear with the shit anyway. Yeah. How long do you ride down the road listening to Daryl Singletary or Merle Haggard or Eminem that friggin' loud?
Yeah,
you just don't.
It's to where it just rattles your bones when that bass hits. You go, how do you sit in there and listen? Like, even when I had all that stuff in there, you could never listen to it. You only did it when you're at the beach and somebody goes, hey, that's really cool. Is it loud? Yeah, bam, and you blow their ears out.
I know, and then I had the system that you could turn on like that in Maroon Z71, 1998 model. I saw my brother had that kind of system. If you turn the key backward, play that jam system, everything's all cool while you're right there by the campfire, getting drink, you know, drinking your beer, and all of a sudden you go to start your car. Yeah. Guess who just got ribbed?
Yeah.
You ribbed yourself.
Yeah, those things will suck the life right out of a battery.
Hey, anything you want to promote, talk about?
I co-train at the Dudleys on Wednesday nights now. Dudleys out Team 3D. They have one in Connecticut or New York, and then one in Orlando that I do, that I'm co-trainer. I train there once a week. It just gives me something to do, and I love it. I think they've been running one of the best schools out there. I know there's a couple, but I think ours is the best. No, I'm just out.
At what level when these guys come to you, or guys and gals, when they come to you, at what level of training are they in the business?
So there's three, like Devon and sometimes, like the one in Orlando, we have this kid named Cruz that teaches kind of the beginners and getting them. Dan teaches, we have our cardio for these kids is like second to none. It's insane. Like I would put any of them up against anybody, anywhere. Their cardio is ridiculous. So I get them. I get anywhere from beginners. I'm not going to teach them anything because I don't, you know, I just don't have a week. I get them a little bit after they put in some moves and we're just trying to get them together and get, it's really about getting them relaxed and understand where they're at in the ring and being more aware of their surroundings and kind of just getting comfortable and just, it's just repetition to keep doing because, you know, things have to happen like this. You ain't got all day to think about stuff and it's got to come to you right now. But they have to think so long that it puts them, you know, once they get in think mode, it's over.
So how long is like a class like that last?
Just for us, it's however long. I mean, they pay for three to 6 months. I think it's all at different.
No, but just a session, that class. I mean, how long? Are you there all day?
All day on Wednesdays.
Okay.
Like my day starts at
that sounds pretty fun.
It's awesome. I love to coach. I really do. When I was at the Performance Center, I loved it, the whole whatever. So I love coaching because I love people. I'm not the end-all, be-all of coaches. I just have a little piece of something that can help some people because what works for me, as we know, doesn't work, and it's nothing anybody hasn't heard that anybody else sitting over here that's ever coached. But coaching is so much fun. Because you have to deal with so many different personalities and so many different, like he's going to pick up stuff. Like Austin is training now. Probably one of the best people I've ever trained. Not because he's my kid. And I say that all the time. And people go, well, he's your kid. You're supposed to say that. No, it's just something that he has that once he does something, he fixes it instantly. So it's weird the levels that you have. I have to spend more time with you. But I can't take away from everybody over here to just spend time with one person. So it's trying to manipulate your time and make everybody understand and keep their attention. The hardest thing is trying to keep their attention while you're teaching somebody else because it's not them, right? But they don't realize, well, if you watch them, it'll help you. It's because they just don't understand. And that's the cool thing about it.
Back when I was growing up, I just figured, you know, everybody wanted to be a pro wrestler. Obviously, you didn't. You didn't watch it. You was riding bulls.
Yeah.
But you got into it with Ron and Don Harris. So I guess my question to you, because I thought everybody, when I signed up to go join Chris Adams Wrestling School, there was actually a line of about 25, 30 people. And I thought when they made that announcement, and this is going to be right after a Saturday morning television taping, man, there's going to be dudes in that line, you know, that look like Bruiser Brody, maybe 6'5", 6'6". I mean, they're just a normal string of human beings. One really heavy set dude, and I had my long blonde hair, and, you know, I had black jerboas on, a purple shirt, some loafers. That's the only clothes that I owned that looked proper because I didn't have no money. I was, you know, working off a scholarship. You know the deal. Yep. But I guess the point I'm making, I thought everybody wanted to be a wrestler back in the day. So what's the appetite? Because I know everybody's searching for talent. The territories have dried out. You don't have all the training grounds, but there are specific schools scattered throughout the United States, as you know, and a performance center down in Orlando with WWE. But coming through your channels, I mean, like, is it like a steady flow of traffic or just hit and miss?
It's kind of we have a certain amount, and they just come and go, and they're all shapes and sizes and styles and, you know, some people do it. We're not because you look at some of these people and you can, like, when you have an eye for it, you can go, you're never, ever. But that doesn't mean that I have to, I can't tell them that because I kind of want to crush their dream. So you, yeah, you'll most like, and most of the times they get it, but they just want to do something else or they just want to be in it. They just want to feel it for a couple of months or whatever. So you can't not teach them. Right. But it's just different bodies, different types, personality. It's everything comes through our door. Everything.
Right.
We have some people that come and just visit and stay for a week or two. We got some Israelites.
Israelis?
Yes, Israel.
Israelians. Yes, we can invent words.
Yes. Yeah. I'm
hey, Billy. Hey, we got a brain over here in Colton. Billy and I ain't the brightest son of bitch in the world. Alert. Alert.
So, yeah, it just depends. I mean, we get a pretty good flow, but it's not a constant every single week. I got new people in there.
Okay, well, here's a question for you. What about Austin? How old is he?
He's 23, right? 22.
Yeah, I believe
so he wants to get in the business?
Yes, he's been training. The deal with them is they never had any desire to get in the business. Like, they've been around it there all their entire lives. But our deal was, whenever you graduate college, you can do whatever you want to. But until then, don't come to me with anything. So Austin's about done. He came up with a bright idea that he wants to give it a shot. But he's kind of me times 10. So you know it's there. If anyone, he could, both of these kids are ridiculously athletic. Like I thought I was athletic until I deal with them. And then I go, well, maybe I'm not as athletic as I thought I was. But he's so athletic and so, has so much charisma, so much drive and really wanting to do this. That it's cool to watch him actually do stuff. And I've been able to have a tag match with him, which was really cool because everybody came and his whole family and everybody came and watched, which was awesome. But it's just something about teaching him. I think it's because he's been, understands, but he doesn't do what he's seen on TV. Right. He does what he knows how to do and how it would feel to him. So it's just so much, it's so different training him.
Well, Colton, and that being said, are you trying to get into business?
I don't believe so. I don't know. I haven't closed the door on it, but now being out in L.A., you know, obviously he would never want me to go get trained by anybody else or anything like that. So, you know, I don't know. I'm always back and forth on it because just like I said earlier with the love and hate relationship with wrestling, it's like I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to be traveling all the time, but also, you know, I won't be.
Well, how old are you?
26.
26, yeah, man. When I started, I was right. Either I was about to turn 24 or I was 24. How old were you when you got in?
A little later than that. Probably 25, 26.
But again, in the same pocket that we're talking about with me and Colton.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But, dude, you got a degree. You got a future.
He does.
In a real job, yeah, in a real life.
Yeah, in the real world.
You ain't got to put your shit in a suitcase and go from town to town. You can make a living going home every night.
Yeah, but it's like we don't even realize, like me and, you know, my brother Austin, we had, you know, the king-size mattress upstairs when we were little. Wrestle all day. We have a trampoline, wrestle all day. When we got to go to the shows backstage with him, we're in the ring all day. And it's like you don't even know, but subconsciously when we got in there, I've only trained twice and I feel like I picked it up super easy. And Austin, like he said, has been training for a year or so, and he's amazing. So it's just like subconsciously we know like we're good at it. So because we've been doing it since we were two.
Okay. Years Are old. You married?
I'm not.
Don't get married. Billy looking out, got a big smile on his face, big ass white teeth. Would you care to expound on that?
Huh? No. I mean, it's.
No, leave it at that. Don't get married yet.
Yeah.
Young buck.
Yeah. But he does have a girlfriend that's awesome.
That's super cool.
Yeah, she's super cool. And I think she, like, you can tell.
And I'm ribbing on a square, Jesus Christ. Yeah, life's hard on any marriage, much less the wrestling business.
Yeah. But, you know, it's you just have to, they have to be on board too if you want to keep them.
Yeah.
Like, and you just have to keep your. If you're sitting there.
Enough said. Oh. All right, we're going to shut it down. Billy's training down there one day a week in Orlando, Florida, at Team 3D. Yeah.
And Colton, you got anything you want to throw out there, promote, this, that, whatever, other than your F-150?
Tell him now that you were hoping that he would ask you to be his assistant, being as you need a job.
Oh, yeah, man.
Hey, do you think Steve needs... Because I know that I think the one with Mike Ryan, when you did him, you were like getting really busy and said, hey, I think I might need to hire an assistant. It was funny because it was like 2 days after he said, hey, do you think Steve will hire me? Because I said, I doubt it. No, I don't know if you want to work for him or not.
Hey, you like the trucks? I'll drive you around in it.
You're so electronically in.
Yeah, I'm struggling to push the damn button over here. But you know, first of all, if you're going to drive, we got to go around. We got to ride around a little bit.
Yes.
You got to have you got to have your dad's wheel skills.
Yeah, he said he was a good wheel man. So it's just it passes down.
A pretty good wheel man.
I let him drive me around everywhere.
But I talked to Sean Waltman out here. Did you pass by X-Pac out here when you was out here?
Mm-mm, no.
Well, anyway, so I was talking to him. And he's got a whole crew of people over here helping him. And he says, Steve, if you ever need any help, man, I want to take him up on it, you know, or somebody. But then I just think, man, you know, if I'm dependent on somebody, then it's not just me. And here's the thing. This is a straight up shoot. I don't plan anything. Man, I wake up and life starts.
Yeah.
I told this story before. My brother, 2 years older than me, Scott, he'll tell you where he's going to go in 2 years on vacation, how they're going to do it, when they're going to get there, and lay it all out. Me, I wake up, I'll tell my wife, we sold a ranch, but I tell her, yeah, think about going to the ranch. It's 1,500 miles away. When you leaving? I'm thinking Wednesday. How long are you going to be there? Week, 10 days. Bam, out the door. That's how I do it. So, I mean, like... Yeah. All of a sudden, man, it'll be Monday, and I'll be thinking on Sunday, dude, you need a podcast because you got to turn one in on Monday. We can do, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it comes up.
Yeah.
Exactly. A lot of people, you know, they plan all their shit out. They're way more organized than me, but that's just how I roll.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if I get in a jam, I'll get your phone number. Already?
Yeah. Cool. That's
Colton, cool. Thanks for joining in and clarifying a few things, because I know your dad, man, because believe me, the only thing stopping me from jumping over up now is this table.
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen your fist clenched the whole time,
that,
ready to get
that
out.
That in good sense.
And here's the thing, Billy, I want to put this out there on public record. That night in New Orleans, when I let you school me in that headlock, dude, I was working.
Yeah.
You was shooting.
Yeah.
I was working.
No.
Straight
There's
up shoot.
There's no way. You're not that good of a
dude,
worker.
Dude,
I mean, you're
I'm
good.
Telling
you ain't
you.
That good.
Dude, I gave you 50%.
No.
You
were
about to
stretched.
Bust a gut over.
No, you were stretched.
You was about to bust a gut.
Quick.
Dude, I was about to call him a high spot. He started squeezing my friggin' head. Can't call a high spot. Hell, I had to swear on my life.
Yeah.
All right. That's the way I saw it. It's the way it
that's
happened.
Not, no, that is not the way it happened.
Dude, here's the thing. Billy Gunn had me in a headlock so damn tight, he almost turned my gold necklace into a nugget. That's Steve Austin. I'm hanging out with Billy Gunn, my old traveling partner, longtime friend, and his son, Colton, riding off in the sunset. Awesome seeing you guys. Thanks for coming by the crib.
Thank you very much.
Podcast One and Sound of Success present Oh My, a celebration of Dick Enberg. A special Sound of Success episode commemorating one of the greatest sportscasters of all time. Hosted by Rich Eisen and Susie Schuster. With interviews and stories from Vin Scully, Jim Nance, Bill Walton, Dan Patrick, Billie Jean King, Steve Kerr, and more. Find Oh My, a celebration of Dick Enberg on PodcastOneSports.com and the Podcast One app.
All right, everybody, give me the go home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank my guest, Billy Gunn, along with his son, Colton Gunn, for coming by 317 Gimmick Street and shooting the breeze. I was going to give you guys a video to watch. Maybe you can remember this match. It was a pay-per-view. It was done in Houston, Texas. I don't remember what the damn name of it was. It was that one where I threw that trash can at Billy Gunn. That's what we were talking about. Man, I looked at him. He looked at me. I saw that trash can. I give him a nod, and here he comes. And I just launched that damn trash can. I can't remember the name or the year. It seemed like it probably would have been about 1998, give or take. I don't even know what it was, but it's about an 8 or 10 man tag. Cactus Jack, Terry Funk, myself, Billy Gunn. Hell, I can't remember who all was in the match, but I remember throwing that damn trash can at Billy Gunn, if you can find that on the WWE Network. That's a pretty damn entertaining match to watch. I know Brian James was there at Road Dogg, because I believe they were the ones feeding that comeback, and I think I took the finish on him. Great match. Those guys fed the hell out of me at the back end of that thing. Mick goes out there, gets tangled up in a big-ass bunch of barbed wire, him and Terry. It was a great time. Houston crowd was going crazy. And everybody was ready to just shell out and have a good time, and we did. If you can find that match, check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. Hey, man, all my Broken Skull Ranch shirts, they're over at prowrestlingtees.com/Steve Austin. I have an IPA beer. It's called Broken Skull IPA. El Segundo Brewing Company makes it. And over here in California, we're at Whole Foods and Total Wines. If you don't live in Cali, check out InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. Hey, folks. I always tell everybody, you need a pocket knife. And if you're looking to get a badass pocket knife, check out the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife or the new Cold Steel Working Man's Knife at my new Amazon store. They got the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. And hey, I want to say thank you big time to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page, and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Speaking of Podcast One, the new Podcast One app is now available for download at the App Store or Google Play if you ain't got it yet. There's not another podcast app like this one anywhere, and that's because the new Podcast One app is loaded with some cool-ass features that let you do a lot more than just listen to your favorite shows. You can access behind-the-scenes photos, articles, and connect with other fans of the shows you like. Hell, watch over 1,000 360 virtual reality videos. You can actually watch some of your favorite shows in virtual reality. It's like you're sitting right in the same room with them. So get to the App Store, Google Play, and download the new Podcast One app now. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.